The time for empty talk is over. Now arrives the hour of action.
It's time for the John DePietro Show here on News Talk, WNRI, 1380 AM and 99.9 and 95.1 FM.
He's a special kind of sentinel.
Mr. DePietro, who is in the eye of the storm.
Suddenly, John DePietro became the story.
Radio talk show host, John DePietro.
All right, here we go, folks. The Power Hour has arrived. It's Political Monday. Good afternoon. Good afternoon, it's John DePietro. This is the John DePietro Show. Weekdays, we start at 11. We go till 2 a.m. 1380, 99.9 FM, and always on at WNRI.com. This portion of the program brought to you by Kay's. It's in there just the other day for lunch, dinner, or drink in the lounge. Say hello to Faye behind the bar. Stop into Kay's. They're waiting for you. Let's bring him on. He's the managing editor of OceanStateCurrent.com. It is our friend Justin Katz. Good afternoon, Justin.
Good afternoon, John.
Justin, I want to start off with the work that you worked on, the report. We had Mike Stenhouse in studio last week, and that is the report that came out from the Rhode Island Center for Freedom and Prosperity and how much the public sector unions cost Rhode Island. And what I found just astounding is I'm going to say the numbers are even probably closer to $1 billion. Now, the report came out that basically, and I want people to understand, it's what you overpay. It's what we're overpaying for what the cost should be. The cost came out, you did a lot of analysis, to about $888 million. But that's how much over. So basically, the public sector unions, by having these teachers unions and the firefighters unions, police, I believe it's the state workers as well, having that is costing the state $1 billion. That was an incredible report that you were part of putting together.
Oh, yeah, thank you. That the $888 million is our best estimate. So we did come up with a range, and the high end of the range was $1.1 billion a year. That's state and local overpayment, or a premium of what we would be paying with sort of free market rates for salaries and benefits and that kind of thing. So it is an astounding amount of money, and it's even, we tried in any decision we made to come up with the best estimate. The $888 million was to be kind of conservative. What should we count here? What doesn't? What is not, debatable? What is a real number we could put our finger on? And that is it. And it bears keeping in mind as well, it doesn't include, for example, if you have multiple people on a DOT crew watching concrete pour out of a machine, if you have 10 people watching that, it doesn't include the extra people. This is assuming you want to keep every employee you've got. This is how much we think you could reduce the value of their pay and benefits and be more fair with the private sector.
And Justin, talk a little bit about, because obviously you follow this. I'm interested to hear in going through and compiling this, some of the things that maybe you were even surprised at that stood out to you.
Well, I think one of the, it's not maybe not the biggest item, but because I follow this so closely, I wasn't aware of one big one is the compensated absences. So when your teachers or your other employees get a sick time benefit of say 15 to 20 days a year on, on top of a shortened work year, but they get that benefit and they get to carry it over. So you get to carry over, say it ranges from town to town, but say 140 days of sick time you can compile, and then you get paid for a portion of those if you don't use them. Sometimes it's every year, sometimes it's when you retire. But right now the state government and the local governments owe $250 million just for days the employees didn't work, that they could have taken off if they were sick or what have you. And I think that's one of the things that really jumped out at me, really paying as much attention as I do already, how these contracts almost try to come up with ways to save money because they're so outrageous. And so what I mean by that is you've got these sick and vacation days that you can build up and then get paid for. So when it comes time to negotiate, the towns and the state will start giving new kinds of days. So now we've got personal days. And the only difference with a personal day is basically you don't get to keep it. So it's just another way to give an additional benefit without having to go overboard. And the same kind of thing applies with the reimbursements when employees don't take health care programs. The only reason you need that, and the only reason that saves money, is because you can guarantee that the government health care programs are better than the ones that somebody's spouse might be getting in the private sector. So you know they're going to take your health care benefit, so you have to pay them not to take it. Those things are really get kind of outrageous. But other than that, the thing that also surprised me was that we tried to come at this in two different ways. The standard way economists do this is to look at data and do a statistical analysis, and you try to control for things like education level and all that. And then we picked one town because it's such a big job. We went with Portsmouth as a median for population and tax levy, and actually went through their budget and looked at their line items and tried to figure out what would be excess, how many sick days are excess, how much pension is excess versus what you get in the private sector, and so on and so forth. And those numbers are best estimates on a statistics, and actually going through a budget line by line, we're very, very close. So that's why we're really confident, and I'm more confident than I expected to be when we started out to do that. So that was a surprising outcome, too.
You know what, really also, there were a number of things that stood out to me, but a couple of things about it that I want to touch on, and one is it's so egregious, and this is the part that people need to understand. It's so egregious that they even try to disguise how the compensation is. Like they only want to list salary, and then they don't want to list a lot of the other ways that the income goes into, such as time off the job or release time for union work, sick leave, personal leave, sabbaticals, and all those other things. That's just how bad it is that it's so much better than the private sector. Someone who is working as a firefighter or a teacher, and so it's so much better than someone in the private sector that the union leaders recognize that, and that's why they even try to disguise just how much these packages are really worth. That's what really also stood out to me, meaning they know how outrageous it is, and therefore, in order to continue to try to make their argument, they actually come up with different ways to kind of disguise it a little bit.
Oh, yeah, and you can see this all over the place. I mean, not only in teacher steps where they'll go out and say, oh, it's only a 2 or 3% raise this year, but that's on top of your step increases. So in some cases, if you're getting a 10% raise over the course of the 3-year contract, it turns into a 45% raise for anybody who started it at a step 7 as a teacher. So some of those are just ways they disguise it. But even down to, say, clothing allowances. So many, you know, you can understand uniforms or something, stuff like that, but even DPW workers and other employees who might not have a uniform per se get clothing allowances. And some of the local contracts actually will say, well, in years that the pension is underfunded, we won't give you part of that clothing allowance. Well, what does that have to do with it? If you're paying for somebody's clothes, if that's the benefit, and that just shows that it really is just a way to say, here's some more cash you can get. We're going to call it a clothing allowance, but it's not really. And this is why when you this study was actually an expansion of one we did in 2012, where we just took a quicker look at the excess pay. And what we found back then was that Rhode Island was actually pretty unique in the country. Usually, what everybody, and the cliche everybody thinks of throughout the country, is usually true. If you work in government, your pay is a little less, but you get more in benefits and you get more in job security. In Rhode Island, even the pay is better. Whereas in the rest of the country and in New England, that's not the case. The pay is usually worse or maybe slightly better. But in Rhode Island, I think it was 10%. Just the pay was better versus the private sector.
You know what is also interesting about that, Justin? And again, folks, good afternoon. It's John DePietro. It is Political Monday. We're speaking with Justin Katz, managing editor for OceanStateCurrent.com. And I think people need to understand this, and I think Mike Stenhouse, when I had him on, Sten did a pretty good job trying to explain it, and that is, this is overpaying by $1 billion. This doesn't mean you wouldn't have teachers in the schools. It doesn't mean you don't have fire protection. It doesn't mean you don't have police. It doesn't mean you don't have state workers. It's way overpaying for what those services should be, And I was thinking of, I know in the Cranston contract, if you're a retired firefighter, you get a clothing allowance. So you and I, well, what do you need a clothing allowance for? Well, they say, well, in case they want to march in a parade, we give them a clothing allowance every year. So in case they want to march in the parade. You don't march in the parade, then you still just keep the clothing allowance. I tell you, Justin, it is a game where they just come up with different ways and different categories that they can just funnel money to these people. And, you know, because so many different contracts and because they are professional negotiators and they control so many of these cities and towns, this is other states, private companies, they would laugh at this type of stuff. And I think also, and I want to get your reaction, but also really is just the kicker to me, and especially when it comes to education, is, you know, they want to deny this latest ad they have on. You know, I don't know if you've seen it, but, you know, my NEA Rhode Island, my mom's a teacher, and they're trying to argue that it goes for all these different things of so kids don't go hungry and better schools. None of that. If you look into where the money is going, none of the money goes to the students. All the money, Warwick, 43% goes to people who don't even work for the city anymore. That's just a myth that any of that money is going to see its way to, like, help the students or improve the education. They're not a little overpaid compared to what the performance is. It's not even close. So what's your reaction to that, Justin?
Well, the two things. One, this is a continuing mystery to me as somebody who watches state and local politics closely. Why, when you see parents getting involved, say, on the school funding, it's always demanding more money, and they never seem to appreciate. I mean, for example, this report finds $888 million a year that we could be paying less. Well, if you put that together for a few years, you could fix the $2 billion-plus problem they say they have with the school building. That's where the money is going, and yet nobody ever, that never becomes part of the conversation. And the quality goes into that too. I mean, if we were driving around on the best roads of the country with competing with Massachusetts for the best education system in the country, if DMV were a snap and you could go in and out with no problem, and if all of these other things were working, people wouldn't necessarily mind paying the premium for it. It'd be worth it potentially. But when you combine the high cost with the lack of service and the idea that everything is always deteriorating, we're always having to take out more debt to pay for things we thought we were already paying for, and introducing tolls and fees and all that, this is where that's going. And that's what we hope people will start to really understand.
If you don't mind, I want to play for you. They're out with a new commercial where they're trying to fight back on this. And the scene is two men, and it's Jiggers down in East Greenwich where they filmed it. And they're having breakfast, and they're talking. And then you're going to hear, apparently this little girl, her name is Avery, I'm seeing on Twitter, and her mother's a teacher. And they're trying to, one of them, you know, they both come off not that slick. But let me just, I want to, have you seen the commercial yet, Justin? Justin, have you
No, I haven't.
All right, let me play it for you, and then just get your reaction to it. This is, they're going to be airing. What's also ironic about this, Justin, is this is paid for by NEA Rhode Island. So therefore, the taxpayers are paying for this, because the taxpayers pay the teachers, and then they pay Walsh and Val Lawson and company with their union dues. So that is another big myth of people think the teachers union, that they're all teachers. That's just organized labor union. They're not educators. Now, granted, they have so many of them, like Lawson and others, that are then part of that. But let me play you the commercial and then get your reaction to it.
Now it's the schools and the test scores.
Unfreaking believable.
Do you curmudgeons have any idea why Massachusetts is performing better than us? 25 years ago, Massachusetts made a once-in-a-generation investment in education. They made a plan and stuck to it.
Nice speech. We got these powerful teacher unions we got to deal with.
I'm going to need another coffee milk over here, please. Our teacher unions are fighting for policies that help all kids. The NEA Rhode Island supports things like repairing school buildings, universal pre-K, ending student hunger, raising awareness about mental health issues, and advocating for social justice. So it's fair to me the wrong sense about teacher unions being the problem.
Gee, kid, you really know your stuff.
Well, my mom's a teacher.
And that's the end of the commercial. We're doing our part, NEA Rhode Island. What's your reaction to that, Justin O'Grien? You haven't seen it. Nothing against the child. The script was written for. You have the two actors sitting in the booth. But the list of what she ticks off, if you go through their budget, they're not part of. They could be in favor of all of that, but they're not. If it was a choice between retired teachers have to suffer or are they going to build and spend more money on school? I mean, I want to hear your thought on that.
Well, the thing that jumps out to me most is the comparison with Massachusetts is that they stuck with their plan. I mean, they mentioned the investment, which just means more money, but they stuck with their plan, and that's what it really comes down to. Rhode Island was actually making some progress under Commissioner Deborah Gist and Governor Kercheri when they had the plan and were starting to impose accountability on the school districts. The teachers' unions fought those moves, and they diluted all of the reforms, and then they just got rid of it and muscled out the education commissioner. We haven't had the same kind of progress since, but they won't allow. That's who will not allow us to follow the Massachusetts model. And actually, Massachusetts seems to have peaked in some of their nationwide test scores, partly because for the same reasons. When Deval Patrick was the governor, the unions flexed a muscle and managed to dilute their reforms as well. So that to me is the largest thing. But then, one of my great aha moments of the past 15 years of watching all this was when it occurred to me that the labor unions, in particular the teachers' unions, because they seem to be somewhat of a different animal than the others, what they do, their reason for being is the social justice, which was mentioned in the commercial. That's what they're there for. They're always backing every progressive social issue. That's why people like Bob Walsh and Pat Crowley are in the game. What they do for money is employee representation. So I'm not, you know, that list of things are not involved with. Yeah, they're not involved in making schools better for children. And when it comes down to it, they'll go right with the teachers. But the social justice and progressive policies, that's what they're all about.
Yeah, you know, that is exactly right. And they did derail it. And now that is just the new talking point, is if they have nothing to do with it, it's because Rhode Island didn't stick with the plan. But they were the ones that eroded the last plan. They were the ones that, just as they were going to make sure that you needed to show proficiency to graduate, they convinced Mattiello and company to go against Deborah Gist and Eva Mancuso. They scrapped it. And then now they're just chasing the tail. And it's like another talking point. All right. I want to jump also to the Wall Street Journal, who had been somewhat of a very flattering to Governor Raimondo at different times, Justin, twice last week came out with very stinging op-ed pieces about her. Several parts of this. Number one, it means more because she is not just a governor of Rhode Island. She's the head of the National Governors Association or chairperson. And so when this stuff hits, all her counterparts around the country see them. Raimondo doesn't care so much about if she gets bad local press. She's very, very protective of her national image. And now the fact that she's going around the country and fundraising and speaking different places, she is carving out more of a national figure. But there were two parts about this that really stick out to me. One is the Wall Street Journal in one piece even used the line that Governor Lamont of Connecticut has competition for the worst business climate in New England. That was a stinger. And then the second part, they're really putting her on notice that they're going to watch what she does with these evergreen bills. So in the evergreen bill, and I think the best way they broke it down was the Wall Street Journal saying, if this becomes law, no public union contract, they will never again ever have to make a concession. Where Mike Stenhouse of Rhode Island Center for Freedom and Prosperity, I thought, made very, very good, valid points of how with Scott Walker, Wisconsin, just a couple of changes, they were able to reel in their costs tremendously. That $1 billion, we could cut into that. But what's your reaction on the Wall Street Journal? I'm told that she was, I don't want to say blindsided, but that type of negative press really got her attention.
Oh, well, I'm sure it did. Not the least because the Wall Street Journal is sort of the most mainstream or biggest and leading indicator of the sort of business press and the more financially savvy media that has been, because she's from, you know, the investment world and did the pension reform, has been more kind to her than they otherwise would be to somebody who's as progressive as she is. So she's got to be watching that pretty closely. I thought one of the interesting lines in there, it was to wonder how much she'll be willing to push back on the progressive pull, given that she's the head of the Democratic Governors Association. That's an important point to keep in mind, is how much of what she's willing to do, can she remain the head of the National Democratic Governors Association and be bucking what the unions want her to do? That's an interesting question. I wonder if that's part of what's motivating this, is because at that level, at the national level, you do have the factions, the business faction, the union faction, the progressive faction, and they're all looking at every individual state and how that will affect the national balance of power. And I think our governor is going to have to do some real hard thinking about which side of all that she wants to fall down on in the next couple of years.
Yeah, I think that was key. And, you know, they frame it very well. She did get some puff national pieces last week that her PR firm had been working on. Again, it talks about her 53% mandate. It talks about the talking points that she wants, which is, you know, the free pre-K and extending the free college tuition, blah, blah, blah. But it was no way near. So they got to someone. Someone at Bloomberg wrote, again, another puff piece on her. But I think the Wall Street Journal, those are very, very hard-hitting. And what I like is it's certainly, at the very least, she recognizes what she does with this Evergreen situation is going to be significant. Now, speaking of that, if you are Raimondo and you're looking for a way out and you're looking for, you know, some kind of a way to get a pass on this, Justin, I love what happened today, which was Brandon Bell wrote, filed a complaint, and it's that East Providence Senator, Val Lawson, NEA Rhode Island, paid executive or vice president, I think, not executive, but vice president. Also, I think she's a social studies teacher at East Providence, but who knows how much time she gets to then, you know, paid time off because she's doing union business. But she stood right in front of the Senate committee. Pat Crowley, well, you know the story, was testifying. So she leaves, goes, sits next to him. Then she goes back and sits up there. Then she votes on it. She even talked about what happened in East Providence, saying, oh, it was so detrimental in East Providence, and teachers had to take a 4% cut, and they didn't know what was going on, and they felt pressure, and we have to eliminate. It's incredible how they still go back to and point to that East Providence situation. But I think this Val Lawson situation, Justin, I think it creates a hot potato. I think the mayor's tomorrow is supposed to meet with Governor Raimondo, and I know that she had said, if you get it on my desk, I'll sign it. But Lawson and the Republicans at this ethics complaint, do you think that could muddy the waters enough that could make Raimondo want to push off on this?
Well, certainly all these things are interwoven, in particular the degree to which the public outrage increases and how much attention is paid to it. So if you have a story about an ethics complaint against a teacher union official who was voting on the very legislation, that helps to convey to the people just how outrageous all of this really is and how corrupt it is. Whether the timing works out, I don't know. That'll be interesting. I mean, the Ethics Commission has a real history of trying to make almost political decisions to get through this kind of a question, and to the point where if an elected official has a lawyer who tells him or her you can do that, and they do it, it's almost like a get out of jail free card, and that seems to be some of what the NEA is setting up here for Lawson. But so the Ethics Commission may try to, you know, find some way to split the baby in half and not find her guilty. But if this can stay in the news, and if people really are put a spotlight on just how corrupt all this is. I mean, they go back to East Providence. The reason East Providence did what it did was they just could not afford the increased pay. And the teachers were, I forget what they were doing in that particular district at that time, but they, you know, teachers striking, doing work to rule. And the more that kind of a thing is on people's minds, the more likely it is they'll really see the Evergreen contracts for what they are. I mean, that's really the biggest part of the game. I mean, we've talked even about something where pushing for abortion legislation this year can be almost like a smokescreen or a flare to make, say, hey, look over here at this contentious social issue while we push all this union stuff. And then the layer of messaging, oh, it's just fairness. It's to make sure it's an even playing field between the management and the employee. Most people don't want to have to pay attention to this stuff throughout their daily life, but the more it's put in front of them, the harder it will be, I think, for the governor to follow through. And it, one thing about the Wall Street Journal essays we were just talking about, there were a number of points in there where I said, hey, I know I've said something like that, and I know I've seen something like that said in a Providence Journal editorial. So all these points just get reaffirmed in a national press, and that starts to, and Raimondo must know that, and so it could start to change her mind. People might have noticed her she's, a week ago she was leaning towards signing them. Now it's a little bit more, oh, I'm going to talk to the mayors and see what they have to say. So there might be some movement on that. We can only hope.
I think it's a done deal as far as she made a promise she would sign it. That's why, you know, the unions would support her. But I think this could muddy the waters a little bit. I viewed her meeting as she was trying to come to some center agreement of talking points to almost just try to get them on the same page as her. But I want to come back to just the basic attitude, Justin. Again, folks, good afternoon. It's John DePietro speaking with Justin Katz, managing editor, OceanStateCurrent.com. It is Political Monday. Their sheer attitude of, can you imagine in East Providence, those teachers had to take a 4% cut and they didn't know when the next contract was going to be. It just shows me, Justin, it is that in order to get a state job, I mean, it's you have to know someone. In order to get so many of these cities jobs, you have to know someone. There is like two distinct different categories that we're talking about, and that to me shows they feel, for instance, their attitude of why they need Evergreen is that the public sector unions should never again have to take some kind of a concession with a union. Like, never again will we be demoralized and humiliated and treated with such, you know, lack of dignity and respect. Never again. They try to put themselves that they're so righteous that we're going to make sure this never is repeated. Where that is, think of the number of people where their plants have closed. An office is, you know, downsized, or different people move it. I mean, this is everyday America, and there is an attitude that they feel they should be above it. I remember that time Bill Murphy was the speaker and said, you know, well, we're not doing that. I mean, for crying out loud, these are state workers we're talking about. There's definitely an attitude of the haves and the have-nots. They all view themselves as like they're the protected class. They know people. Somebody got them a job, uncle, father, cousin, whoever it may be. They're the insiders, and everyone else is on the outside and needs to pay for them to as if they've somehow worked to attain this type of status.
Yeah, I sometimes liken it to a cult. Back to East Providence, if you think back, that was, 2008. Around that time, throughout the private sector, people were losing their jobs.
Left and right. You're right.
Yeah, and I was working in construction at the time, and luckily we had just recently started a very big project in Newport, and union carpenters were coming by the job site all the time seeing if we had any work. But I remember at that time, I literally took a pay cut, significantly more than the East Providence teachers were talking about, and that was part of what motivated me to really get involved in all this stuff, was just the sense of entitlement they seemed to have. And then when they turn around and you point out, you know what, you're way more protected than most people in the world, then they start with this race to the bottom rhetoric, as if they're the standard bearers for the middle class, and if you can't take this away, because then nobody will be in the middle class. It becomes this very strange cult-like talking point, where as if we're paying for them to be in the middle class so that at least somebody will be in the middle class. Even if we all lose our jobs and have to take pay cuts, well, at least those people are fine and we can look to them as the exemplars. But that attitude is nationwide. I mean, even the Obama stimulus package around that same time was entirely about making sure that the recession did not affect public sector workers, and that's just a cultivated culture they've pushed, and it's got a very, very strong hand in Rhode Island. That's one thing people, I think if people start looking into these issues, a little more deeply than just the headlines of a newspaper, they'll have the same reaction you and I do. Like, well, we should, it was outrageous. We were being disrespected and had to take a 4% decrease in our pay. And people in Rhode Island know what that's like because they've had to take much more, and they didn't necessarily have access or even think it would be appropriate to go to their local legislators and say, hey, look, you need to put your thumb on my boss so he can't reduce my salary. I mean, there's just something fundamentally not workable and immoral about that kind of a governing system.
I mean, it is so out of whack. And just lastly on this topic, what do you make of the fact that, you guys put together a report, Sten comes out with it, and immediately, as much as they try to dispute some of it, it immediately becomes attacking Rhode Island Center for Freedom and Prosperity and attacking Stenhouse. And then the same way as Kathy Gregg, the way she explained it was, she asked that Senator Lawson about what happened with her, and her first reaction was, oh, I checked with the Ethics Commission, it's okay. Then when Kathy Gregg doubled back, she basically said, it sounds like she said, well, I asked Bob Walsh, and he said it was okay. Then I believe the third version of it was they called the Ethics Commission. Whoever answered the phone said it would be okay. And as a result of just merely asking some questions, they immediately started attacking Kathy Gregg. And on Twitter especially, a number of them were attacking. These are the same people that go after President Trump for, fake news and how dare he say that to the media and blah, blah, blah. And yet in the blink of an eye, They were criticizing the journal. They were criticizing the journal for writing the story, for covering the story. And then they start attacking anyone that asks any type of question about it. It's the irony is really incredible, Justin Katz.
Oh, yeah. Well, Bob Walsh on Twitter saying, kind of Twitter yelling at Kathy Gregg that she has made herself part of the story.
Right.
Simply by asking questions. And that is what they do. And it goes up to the presidential level, but also it's particularly damaging when you see it down at the state and local levels, because I mean, you're talking about probably the state's leading, most venerable political reporter at the Providence Journal, Kathy Gregg, and even she is being attacked by these union members, which is ironic because one of my complaints about the Providence Journal is they don't often enough disclose that their reporters are actually members of the AFL-CIO, which the NEA is also part of. So they're kind of like union brothers and sisters, but they're going after each other. If somebody of that stature is going to come under that kind of an attack, to be discredited by a labor union simply for asking questions, people farther down on the ladder who might be thinking about getting involved or writing letters or whatever they might be thinking about doing, it's a huge disincentive.
And it is.
That's part of the reason they do it. And it ties right into, as we've talked about all the time, ties right into why when you get somebody like in East Greenwich, Susie Yankee, when she was there and having meetings trying to change the way things were done there, who shows up? Pat Crowley of the NEA, and he's up there in a balcony shouting, making it a hostile environment, partly to intimidate Cianchi and her counsel at that time, but also to let everybody else know, this is what you face if you're going to ask us questions or sit down. And that's what we've gotten used to it at the Center for Freedom and Prosperity, because it's always their go-to.
That's right.
Who are your funders? Well, Rhode Islanders. Well, who are they? Well, we're not going to tell you because we know you're going to go out
and harass them.
So it does take a lot of, initially it takes a lot to get over that. And I'm sure you've been through it too in your career.
Oh,
to get over
my God.
That attack. But once you're through it, it's just so standard. And you wonder how anybody falls for it. But they do, because people don't want to be attacked and harassed like that.
Yeah. And you really saw it just before the last comment on this is it's an intimidation tactic. They do it for that reason. During the East Greenwich stuff, they would form a gauntlet of the firefighters from all communities. You had to walk through the gauntlet. They do that on purpose. They followed different people to their car, and then when one of them turned around, like, are you following? Oh, no, I just want to make sure you're getting there okay. They do it's all intimidation tactics that they do. This is not something like make it up. These are part of the game for them, is to silence anyone that would speak out on something like this. So, and this was the latest with Kathy Gregg. They try to turn it into a personal thing. Before we let you go, Justin, I'd love to hear your thought on, some of the editorials or different people raising alarms over the pension obligations that are out there. Now, I think this all ties in with the Evergreen. They see the economy is going to slow. We saw there was a big story on Saturday. I mean, across the country, the economy is still roaring. That's really what's got President Trump's approval rating up. But you'd never know it with the amount of job losses, lack of companies coming in, lack of hiring that's going on. They want to lock in all these benefits now because when the downturn comes, they don't want any of their members to have to take a hit. But when you look at even, you know, Providence has a $1 billion pension liability, and that's not even realistic because they're using an 8% return, which there were years where they, Seth Magazine at one point was losing money, and Frank Caprio had, I think, a 2% return several years. They tried to adjust it, but that's on an 8% return. And what sticks out to me, Justin, is when Olorza was asked about it, he basically said, you know, at some point, the city's gonna run out of money, so somebody's got to do something to fix it. It certainly isn't going to be him. And as the Wall Street Journal pointed out, with some of these problems, or maybe it was the Providence Journal, Raimondo, the way that she made, you know, the pension reform an issue, she could try to do the same, but she doesn't want to get in a fight on that. But when those things collapse, to me, this sets up the stage. At some point, a lot of these communities, they're suddenly going to wake up, and they are just not going to have the money to fulfill all these outrageous pension obligations.
Oh, well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you mentioned the liability that Providence has. Not only is it unrealistic because they're using an 8% assumption on their return on investments, but it really should be 3 or 4% because it has to be guaranteed to be there. Not only that, but when you look at the liability, it's critical to remember that is what you would have to have in the bank so that when you get the investment returns and when you put more money into it, you'll have enough money in the future. That is not the actual cost of what you've promised to give, which is probably statewide approaching $1 trillion. I've tried to get this number from the treasurer's office and just could not do it. They said, no, our software can't even calculate that number. Yeah, okay, fine. But so that liability isn't even what you owe. Like earlier in this conversation, I mentioned we owe employees $250 million for paid time off. That's what we actually owe them. So when they cash out, that's what we'll give them. The number for pensions is what you need in the bank so your investments work out. And it's, you know, that can't be working because if you look in Providence in particular, their pension fund, well, first of all, they've got more retirees than they have employees. And so you're paying more than an entire workforce to be retired. And the people you have in your jobs right now are not putting money into the system, are not as big a group as the people who are collecting money out of the system. And consequently, even with decent pension investment returns in the past couple of years, Providence is paying out more than it's taking in. So its pension fund is actually shrinking every year. And it takes a lot of sort of accounting voodoo and double talk to make it seem like that's not a problem. But when you're only 26% funded by an unrealistic calculation and you're paying out more than you're taking in every year, it doesn't take much math to understand that can't last for very long. And so when you get something like our economic downturn, which we are in Rhode Island, and it's interesting, if you look at when we started to lose jobs, it's exactly when last year's budget went into effect with minimum wage increases and with the mandatory sick time. So as you're killing the economy, you're taking away the money that Rhode Islanders have by taking their jobs away. At the same time, all these pension plans are going to collapse, and it's going to come to a head. And I think you have to see a lot of the labor union push for evergreen contracts or minimum overtime hours for firefighters, that kind of thing. That's to protect them when the inevitable comes. And it makes you wonder if it's coming a lot sooner than a lot of us have thought. And that's why they're all in such a hurry.
Exactly. No, I've thought that. And one last thing before I let you go. And again, folks, good afternoon. It's John DePietro. We're speaking with Justin Katz, managing editor, OceanStateCurrent.com. Boy, the South Kingstown story, again, it doesn't get as much press, but to me it just shows a lot. And that is the superintendent down there, who apparently was very good, realized, boy, you know, we don't have as many we have less children attending these schools. We don't need all these schools. We need to maybe close some schools, lay off some teachers. So what do they do? A member of the NEA, Rhode Island, runs for office, gets on the school committee, basically takes over the school committee, and they got rid of that, you know, that they forced out basically that superintendent. That is a lesson that even someone like that, she's not even elected office, but you make a motion of we have empty classrooms, we don't have the attendance, we can save money, things that should be done on behalf of the people. when the people were not paying attention, or somehow she got in. I mean, they, sometimes you can get in because it's an off year, but boy, that is a good lesson. She is now gone. She went to Connecticut, and now that certainly doesn't solve the problem down there as far as the, you know, the taxpayers of South Kingstown.
Yeah, well, that's the message, right? Stop talking about the problem. That's basically how we're operating in Rhode Island right now. Stop talking about the problem. You talk about the problem, we're going to get rid of you. And it's too bad. People need to stop falling for that kind of thing. I know in Tiverton we've lost more than two grades worth of children. Let's say all third grade and all fourth grade completely gone, and yet the costs would continue to go up, and they continue to claim they don't have enough desk space. So this, people need to stop falling for the easy talking point of just give us more money and it'll all be better, because we have real problems and we need to talk about them. That's the only way to fix them.
Folks, he is the managing editor of OceanStateCurrent.com. He's Justin Katz. Justin, excellent as always, and we'll talk to you again.
Thanks, John. I look forward to it.
All right, folks, there it is. Justin joining us on this Monday, 401-766-1380, 401-766-1380. We'll go to your calls. Good afternoon. You're up on the John DePietro Show. Hello.
Hi, John. It's Chris Young. I agree with you guys 100%. I mean, Providence really has been led down a path where it will be insolvent due to Cicilline and Tavares and
well, right now it's Alorza. Yeah.
Right. Well, anyways, I mean, these issues that you're addressing really cannot be addressed, because essentially the root cause of it is never addressed, you know, which is the Providence Journal just ran an article over the weekend that the Rhode Island count of voters has long been higher than the Census Bureau's.
Right. That was actually on Friday's paper, and I was talking about it earlier, but go right ahead.
So basically the elections, the Census Bureau did a survey of Rhode Island residents, and they counted how many registered voters there were in the November 2018 election, and the total was 532,000, but that's 255,000 fewer than Nelly Gorbea said were registered to vote. So there's 255,000 votes that are dead people, that are easily manipulated by the State Board of Elections through election fraud. You don't have fair elections in Rhode Island. You have fixed elections in Rhode Island. People are put into power by the powers that be, the banking institutions. They decide who gets elected, who doesn't get elected, for an agenda, you know.
All right, now hold on. It's not the banking institutions. It's the Democrat Party and the unions. That's who does
Roger
it.
Bijan, yeah. Roger Bijan told me in private that the banks really run the state. They decide who gets elected into Congress. And he told me in a private conversation when we were talking about election fraud.
All right, well, number one, you should keep that conversation private. That's number one. Number two, as far as Congress, our problem is not Congress. You're right about the elections. You're absolutely right about the elections, Chris. But it's Gorbea is completely unaccountable with this type of thing. We don't have a Republican governor, and you don't have an attorney general. You don't have anyone to lead the charge against her. I'll tell you what we do have our friend Sal with Metro by T-Mobile. Happy Monday, Sal.
Here I am, JD. Happy Monday.
You know, it's a new week. The weather's not that great, but this is a perfect time of year for people to realize they want to upgrade their phone system, save money. And again, folks, the real benefit, you can go and see him directly in person. Stop it and see Sal at Metro by T-Mobile in the Town Hall Plaza right there at Wood Avenue in Johnston, next to Johnston Town Hall.
So easy to find. The sun is out here in Johnston today. People are coming in. We got the doors open. This is a great time to switch to Metro by T-Mobile. $60 a month, all in. It's going to get you unlimited talk, text, data. And the best part, you're going to have unlimited Amazon Prime. Unlimited Amazon Prime access. This gives you the two-day shipping, the unlimited movie watching, the music listening, the deals at Whole Foods, all the great benefits that Amazon Prime gives you, you're going to have this included in the $60 plan. If you had to buy this on its own, it would cost you over $100 a year. It's going to be included for free, included in the $60 plan. $60 a month, again, all in, unlimited talk, text, and data. I just finished up with Earl from Johnson. He made the switch over. He's happy. He's saving a ton of money compared to his previous company he was using. So come down. This is a great time to switch. I'm at the corner of Atwood and Harford Avenue, right next to Johnson Town Hall. Or if you're busy today and you're working and you want to make an appointment to come down during the week or the Saturdays with Sal, call me, 332-5051, 332-5051. Again, 332-5051. Call me today for an appointment tomorrow.
I love that. Folks, stop it and see him. He's the best. It's our friend Sal at Metro by T-Mobile. It's John DePietro. This is the John DePietro Show. 766-1380, 401-766-1380. Chris was right, though, about that Nelly Govia thing. It's terrible. And I don't know what can be done about it. I'll tell you. We have to wait to see as the Journal takes her to court. Hey, I want to remind you one thing about this weather, though. This is a good time to get your lawn in order and call Lawn Doctor, right? Call now. Your best lawn ever guaranteed. 50% off the first application, 15% off grub prevention, Lawn Doctor, crabgrass control, time release fertilizer, broadleaf weed control, professional blend of high calcium lime, time release fertilizer, blend with a surface insect control, broadleaf weed control. Folks, call Lawn Doctor today. Go with a local owned, they are the best, local owned lawn care provider, and it's Lawn Doctor. Give them a call today. You know, you're going to have a better lawn. You're going to love it. It's worth it. Give them a call and visit their website, lawndoctor.com, lawndoctor.com. Your best lawn ever guaranteed. Call 401-392-1025, 401-392-1025, or online at lawndoctor.com. It's John DePietro. This is the John DePietro Show. Right now, 152 phone lines, 401-766-1380, 401-766-1380. A lot more ahead. Your phone calls right now on the John DePietro Show.
I'm on the road and my ride is going strong.
Here in Rhode Island, we love driving across our beautiful state. From the beaches to the cities, we enjoy every mile. That's why more Rhode Islanders drive Paul Massey vehicles, one of the best ways to ride in style. Right now, lease a 2019 GMC Terrain SLE for $198 a month for 39 months, with $2988 due at signing. So find your style and enjoy every mile, only at Paul Massey.
In my Paul Massey ride.
Here in Rhode Island, our state is filled with some pretty unique slices of life. When it comes to buying a vehicle, Rhode Islanders choose another true Rhode Island original. The Paul Massey One Price Guarantee. Our best price is right on the vehicle. All you do is buy happy. Lease the all-new Silverado Double Cab Custom 4-Wheel Drive for $279 a month for 39 months, with $3988 due at signing.
My Paul Massey ride.
Bob, well, remember, you're riding along, and suddenly, what's this? Oh, in an accident? Did that happen? Call West Fountain Auto Body, 401-272-3340. Call the professionals at West Fountain Auto Body, 401-272-3340. Call Kenny, Patricia at West Fountain. They're located 400 West Fountain Street in Providence. Did someone hit your vehicle? Do you have a dent you want to get fixed? Bring your vehicle to West Fountain Auto Body. They'll work for you, not the insurance company. From a small dent to a nearly total vehicle, you can depend on West Fountain Auto Body. 401-272-3340. 401-272-3340 for West Fountain Auto Body.
You're not like anyone else, and neither is your company, which is why at Bank RI, our commercial banking doesn't treat you like anyone else. With signature commercial banking from Bank RI, you'll find a premier set of services, flexible lending options, and the kind of personalized attention that makes our commercial banking unlike, well, anyone else. Signature commercial banking only from Bank RI. Member FDIC, equal housing lender.
Folks, remember, when your appliance is dying, just call Ryan. When your appliance is dying, just call Ryan. Ryan's Appliance Repair. Repairs on all makes and models of appliances, washers, dryers, dishwashers, stoves, refrigerators, microwaves, garbage disposals. Senior citizens discount is available. And the owner, owned and operated Ryan, he's out on every job. Call Ryan's Appliance Repair at 401-710-7096. Saturday appointments available. All work is guaranteed for 90 days, parts and labor. When your appliance is dying, do you have an appliance that's not working properly? Call Ryan's Appliance Repair, 401-710-7096, 401-710-7096 for Ryan's Appliance Repair.
You are listening to the John DePietro Show on 99.9 FM and 1380 AM. News Talk WNRI.
All right, folks, and we're back on this Monday. Good afternoon, one and all. Here I am. It's Juan. John DePietro. This is the John DePietro Show. 766-1380, 401-766-1380. Red Sox manager Alex Cora will skip the White House visit, will not join the Red Sox Thursday when they're honored at the White House. Said he's not comfortable making the trip, given what he considers the poor treatment of Puerto Rico. Puerto Rico got more money than any state when they got hit by the hurricane. The decision whether to visit the White House has roughly split the team. Mookie Betts said in January he's not going to attend. Xander Bogaerts joined him Sunday. I won't be going. David Price, Jackie Bradley Jr., Rafael Devers made the same decision, along with Christian Vaquez, who's from Puerto Rico. Who is going? J.D. Martinez, Chris Sale, Mitch Moreland, Steve Pearce, he's the MVP of the World Series, said they're going to go to the White House, as well as Brock Holt, Matt Barnes, Brandon Workman. Other players said they're undecided. Red Sox have said the trip is optional. Players, coach, staff members. John Henry, who owns the Globe, principal owner of the Red Sox, team chairman Tom Werner, I've actually interviewed both, have said they would attend. Team president Sam Kennedy and president of baseball operations Dave Dombrowski, they're also going to attend. Manager Alex Cora, he's going to skip it. Hey, how about the head of the 195 redevelopment land stepping down, 4 years at the helm, Peter McNally, took over 2015. Folks, that just remains mud and empty land. Mud and empty land. And no one is building on it. You know why? Now, I've heard it is completely unrealistic, the goals that they have for that 195 land. That's what I've heard. Completely unrealistic. And now Senate President Dominic Ruggiero, he wants to get more involved in it. The word on the street is it's easier and cheaper to build in Boston. And you get a bigger bang, right? So developers think that it should be easier and cheaper to build in Providence on that 195 land. It's actually not. It's more expensive. They put you through hoops, and nothing has happened with that. So he is another person. He's been there 4 years, came in 2015. What has really been accomplished? It's still empty land. You don't have any developers there. And the window is closing because nothing is going to build there with any type of economic downturn. That's for sure.
He's John DePietro, he's really in the know with his talk show on your radio. He's John DePietro, tune in your radio. Go get him, Johnny D.
Listen, enjoy this Monday. I'm back tomorrow at 11. Remember, you can email me, john@depietro.com, DePietro.com. Follow me on Facebook, Twitter, and also Instagram at John DePietro Show. The Dion Experience is next. Again, we're back tomorrow at 11 on AM 1380. It's 99.9 FM and always online at WNRI.com.
WNRI and W236 CW Woonsocket, 1380 AM and 95.1 FM.